This is a new live son of a bitch.
Bull frickin' horse shit.
I hate to go all technical on you, but all hands on deck, swirly thing alert.
Attention.
Listen, you motherfuckers.
Buckle up, pedal heads.
You're experiencing the Lotus Effect with Phoenix and Phone Boy.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
You are my podcast. My only podcast. So if you fucking take my podcast away, I'm going to shove my foot so far up your ass.
It is out of sheer morbid curiosity I'm allowing this freak show to continue.
How do you fix that, though?
Take a big step back and literally
suck my dick.
Are you interested? I know you are, because it's fuck or walk.
You're shitting me.
Have you made your decision for Christ?
To tell you the truth, I don't give a shit.
Well, you know who else doesn't give a shit?
Phoenix and Phone Boy?
Ah, not them again!
Oh, they're horrible.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Right!
Yeah, we've been doing this at this point. This will be 204 fucking episodes. You know by now what we're talking about. We are the Lotus Effect. We are absolutely obscene, and we love it.
It's obscene! That's the point!
And welcome to episode 204 of The Lotus Effect, provisionally titled Accepting the Truth Shall Set You Free. And, you know, there's a little backstory to that that I'm not going to tell. But as you all know by now, the show is made up, the content doesn't matter, and I'm Phoenix. I'm an yo.
You are the motherfucking Antichrist!
And I'm Phone Boy, but...
And I am the motherfucking Antichrist. Just ask certain people. But that's okay.
Yeah. We sell profane and profane accessories. Is that
we do. And at a good price. The tariffs have not affected our prices on profane and profane accessories.
That's right. The price of profanity. I think I need to write that down. Anyway.
I think you do, too. So we also want to welcome our Apple Podcast and Spotify listeners and anyone else who is listening for the first time, no matter how you are putting us in your ears. Welcome. And I guess by now, if you haven't freaked out, well, you haven't been paying attention.
What is this, a freak out?
This is kind of strange.
This is terrific.
I think I'm going to be sick.
Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. Are the fires of hell aglowing? Is the grisly reaper mowing? Yes! The danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing!
We're there.
I just had an orgasm. The guy is jizzing all over himself.
I'm freaking out, man.
You are freaking out, man.
Yeah, don't freak out too hard. It's only us at the Lotus Effect. And we know that the Lotus affects everyone differently. So however and wherever the Lotus is affecting you today, we want to hear about it.
I got mail! Yay!
I got you a dollar.
You know, we put a lot of time into being stupid on the mic for you folks. And we talk about it every week that we operate on the value for value model, which consists of the three T's, time, talent, and treasure. And of course, we don't focus a lot on the treasure, so we like to get it out of the way in, you know, the beginning of this shit show. If you do feel compelled to send a little bit of your fiat fund coupons before they take everything away, because I literally heard that they're discontinuing pennies. What the fuck? I'm not going to rage about that. So if you have a little extra pennies that you would like to throw at us, you can go to lotuseffect.show, click on the green We Like Money button, and send us some of those precious pennies before they get rid of them. And maybe some of the, you know, the funny money paper, too, while you're at it. You know, however you do it, I'm sure it's digital. That's how they want it. You know, you can do it that way, or you can go to Cash App, #$TheLotusEffect33. Weirdo likes to do that. We love when he does that. Now, you can also visit our merch store at lotuseffect.shop, where you can buy our crap that's been smeared with our brand feces, or you can also do a one-time or recurring donation through that site, which, again, I don't know why you would want to, since you can do it through lotuseffect.show, I'm pretty sure. So, meanwhile, we didn't have anyone, as far as I know.
I didn't see anything via the channels that I monitor, and I don't think you saw anything via the channels you monitored.
Nope, I didn't get any notifications, and that's cool. Like I said, I don't really care all that damn much about the financial part of this, the treasure part. Screw that. I care about the other parts of this that mean something to me, like the fact that y'all put in the time to send the ACK back. You know, we love hearing from you guys. We love knowing you're out there. It only takes a minute or two. And the few ways that you can do that, okay, first of all, subscribe to the podcast. We absolutely love seeing the numbers of y'all tuning in, quote unquote, sending the ACK back. Now you can find, follow, and rate and review us, you know, so tell us either how much you absolutely hate us and how the hell are you on the air, or tell us how much we made you squirt milk out your nose or pee your pants. Either way, let us know. Now, of course, you can,
one of the ways you can actually...
Sorry about that. For some reason, I looked over at you and my brain just went flatline.
Yes.
Like, however, you distract, you were like a magnet and yes, you distracted my
I
brain.
I distracted. So, but I have to hit the clip that goes with this. So one of the ways you can reach out to us is on this wonderful service called Mastodon. Or you can use a Pleroma or a Coma or one of those other fucking things that speaks O status or whatever the underlying language is. Yeah, I know. It's not just Mastodon. All right. But either way, you can find me at phoneboy at lotuseffect.social. And you can find my compadre here at PHEONIX at lotuseffect.social.
I still can't believe that fucking dweeb at Burger King thought you spelled Phoenix PHEONIX. Fuck my life if that is what the generation of now. We have no hope. We're living in idiocracy.
Yeah, well.
You know, you can send us email also. I monitor it. I don't give a fuck at lotuseffect.show. It's a real email address. It really sends the email to me, and I really send back responses. Most of them include go fuck yourself. No, I'm just kidding. I would never do that unless someone actually sent me like a shitty email. Then I might actually be less polite. But yeah, I monitor it, and we love when you send us email. If you don't want to, if you're a little more of a purist, you can send it to phoenix@lotuseffect.show or phoneboy@lotuseffect.show, and it will get to us. As well, you can send us snail mail. We like receiving physical media, if you will. And now that I hear the government shutdown is finally ending, maybe the postal service will start being better. Suck less. But anyway, biggest thing, join us in the chat sometime. We do Rideshare Radio or 2.5 Bends like we did last night, Fridays at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, or you can join us during this shenanigan-filled fest known as the Lotus Effect, and then straight afterward, we do Studio 33. We start all that off at about 5 Eastern, 4 Central, when we don't do a 4:20 Central start just for the shits and grins of it like we did today. Now, details on how you can do that are located at lotuseffect.live. All you need to know to listen, tune in, turn on, and drop out with the Lotus Effect. Now, another way you can send the ACK back, we really love this. Every week, we have a topic. We call it the weigh-in topic. And the way you can weigh in is by calling or texting 253-237-3321.
One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingy.
Dell Computers, this is Chip.
I'm sorry, sir, but that line is boozy.
Yeah, that line can get boozy, but it's going to be Google that answers it, and it's going to turn it into some sort of bullshit that probably, that might possibly become a show title. This has happened.
It often happens.
Yeah, it's happened on a few occasions. So this week, right, our weigh-in topic, because we talked about the fact that this is why you call that number. You can call it for other reasons, too. You can tell us.
Yeah, you can send feedback through that number.
Yes, exactly. You can also make requests during Studio 33 or Rideshare Radio, right? So this week's weigh-in topic is going to be your favorite Thanksgiving pie. Even though we're not really holiday people, that's, you know, I don't know. It just that way. I think that was what we thought of at the time.
It's the one holiday question we're going to ask for this particular month. So for the rest of the month, which there's only like a couple more weekends, but yeah, no more holiday questions. They will not be holiday related.
Yeah, exactly. Although we're gonna have to come up with some other ones. We've got favorite thing about fall next week. That is our so. If you have suggestions for the weigh-in topic, this is one of those things you can give us feedback about, right? So I think Sir Bemrose has the correct answer with that. Yeah, as a nerd, yeah, we understand you're talking about the numerical constant of pi.
Yeah, but it's 3.14. God damn my fucking mouth. 3.14159, yeah. Not 3.1416, just saying.
Yeah, he's just rounding up, but at any case,
I didn't round. I actually went one more number out. Sorry.
Yes, I know.
And then, we don't round because you literally can go 200 numerals out.
Weird Al apparently knows pi to 1,000 places. That's all I need to say about that. So
that's right.
All
right.
Anyway, I think we've jacked off enough, right? And so I think...
We should take it from Dr. Johnny Fever.
Yes, we should.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide and say, give it to me straight, doctor, I can take it.
But we're not going to take this.
We don't want your shit.
Please don't send us your shit.
Yeah, we're not taking it, folks. Whatever form it takes. Yeah, we ain't taking it. But, you know, we love your feedback and we love honest feedback. We want to be respectful, but... Yeah, I mean, leave your shit at the door, man. That's all we want to say. And
yeah, like I always say, you know, don't be racist. That's my job. Don't be anti-Semitic. Just don't be a dickhead.
That's right.
Unless it's the kind that, you know, the degenerate kind we appreciate.
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyway, I think Leslie Nielsen has something to remind us.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
Oh, my. All right. Well, yeah, with these stories, it's going to be good luck to see just how much I'm going to want to, I don't know, punch the computer, something like that, just because of the...
It's possible.
Yeah, with these stories, I mean, this is going to be fun this week. So, but we got to get into that part of the show first, which is the health segment, which will never, ever, ever be...
Brought to you by Pfizer.
Okay, when I saw this one, I'm like, oh my God, let's see what this... You can just read the... Knowing that it comes from a mainstream topic, you just know that there's going to be some bullshit in there. And it's and even though it seems kind of, you know, and it even sort of sounds like it counters the narrative. It says, yes, you can be intolerant to fruit and veg.
Ta-da!
Diabetes. Have a good day.
Oh, my God. Okay, so hereditary fructose intolerance is a rare genetic condition that affects how the body manages the sugar fructose. Fructose isn't just in fruit, it's in honey, some vegetables, sweetened drinks, and many packaged foods such as cakes, cookies, sauces, and some breads. Fructose can also be added during the processing of some meats like deli meats and sausages and dairy products such as chocolate milk. Sucrose, i.e. table sugar, and sorbitol, a sugar substitute often in chewing gum, toothpaste, and medications, also contain fructose or are converted into fructose during digestion. This means people with hereditary fructose intolerance are also intolerant to these sugars. Now, people with this condition don't have the key enzyme amylase B needed to break down fructose. This means fructose builds up in the liver, kidneys, and intestines. This excess fructose can cause serious health problems such as seizures, coma, and in some cases, death from liver and kidney failure. Hereditary fructose intolerance is passed down to a person when both their parents carry the gene. It's considered a rare condition that affects about 1 in 10,000 people.
And you're going to tell me that two of these 1 in 10,000 people, so basically 1 in 5,000 people, is going to get together with another 1 in 5,000 people that both have this gene? That sounds like some odds that I would bring to fucking Vegas because they're so long shot.
Well, not only that, okay, but that pretty much, because I'm sitting here going, oh, so they're basically saying, okay, so this is the way I see this, because what about all the people who have type 2 diabetes from eating too much sugar? Because I'm sitting here reading this and I'm going, this is basically what happens when you have, you know, because you're eating all this stuff with sugar in it and it doesn't matter. It's like ice, you know, so it's kind of creating some, it's almost creating a disease. In a sense that going, my goodness, I have this, I must have this disease because I can't break down fructose when maybe you shouldn't be having it in the first place. But anyway.
I think you should tell them about all the foods that they recommend avoiding.
Oh God, yeah, I'm gonna go. I skipped through the there's a lot of bullshit in there to just like about the intolerance. We'll just go straight for how they manage it, which is by diet. So they say you should avoid fruits, and that's probably a good idea. And we tend to say only fruit only in season, right? Cereals and grains, although they say pasta, rice, and other grains such as quinoa or buckwheat are generally safe, but avoid flavored or pre-made varieties. Oh, God. Yeah, anyway, it's still fucking
sugar. A grain is a grain, and oh, by the way, still turns into sugar.
Yes. Vegetables. Now, they say most are okay, but sweeter ones such as peas, corn, beetroot, onions, pumpkin, sweet potatoes, carrots, and zucchini are not.
Excuse me?
There are some,
and fuck me foremost, zucchinis are not sweet, okay? Pumpkin, not sweet. Onions, I can see, but I'm not giving up my onions, so...
Well, no. But I think it's also, like, how much of it that you have versus...
Yeah, they don't ever talk about how much of something. They just straight on say... No.
Yes. Breads, though it's apparently okay if it doesn't have added sugars or sweeteners. Let's like ignore the fucking gluten.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. Desserts and dairy, though, they say natural yogurt is okay, though nothing flavored, and avoid plant-based milks, which have
at least they're smart enough to say avoiding plant-based milks.
Now, they say they should avoid protein, right? Which, although they say specifically processed meats such as sausage, deli meats, or marinated meats. Now, the other foods that you need to be cautious with, like sauces, dressings, condiments, as they contain many hidden sugars or sorbitol. I mean, I'd also watch out for the seed oils as well. But, you know, yeah, choose homemade versions using safe ingredients. Now, I'm kind of, when I look at this and I'm kind of going, yeah, but they're basically saying, right, that they're also kind of saying the other side of this is, yeah, if you avoid the sugars for the most part, they didn't go quite far enough as far as I'm concerned. But I mean, I could kind of say maybe step-ish in the right direction. You know, with some of these suggestions, it's certainly better than the standard American diet. But again, they're making up a condition, right? They're highlighting a 1 in 50,000 or 10,000 or whatever it is condition that if you sit there and read through it, it's like this is what's happening to Americans already. So they're going to want to go to their doctor to get this treatment for this disease, right? So they're basically chumming the waters for more pharma. I mean, seriously. When I read that, anyway, that's what I get from that story. When I pulled the story, I'm like, there's got to be some reason I pulled this because this story just irritates the shit out of me.
And that's why you pulled it, because you wanted to self-trigger.
Yes, and apparently I triggered and I came up with some good bullshit. All right, awesome.
Maybe.
All right, let's go to the next story.
Yeah, and it actually, in my opinion, sort of kind of ties in because the science of weight loss and why your brain is wired to keep you fat.
Because I'm fat, 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 really, really fat.
So let's go back a few hundred thousand years to examine our early human ancestors. Because we can blame a lot of the difficulty we have with weight loss today on our predecessors of the past. Maybe the ultimate cause of blame the parents. Excuse me, the ultimate case of blame the parents. From our early ancestors, body fat was a lifeline. Too little could mean starvation. Too much could slow you down. Over time, the human body became remarkably good at guarding its energy reserves through complex biological defenses wired into the brain. But in a world where food is everywhere and movement is optional, those same systems that once helped us survive uncertainty now make it difficult to lose weight. No, what makes it difficult to lose weight is your fat ass being too lazy to go for a fucking walk or eat right. But I digress. When someone loses weight, the body reacts as if it were a threat to survival. Hunger hormones surge, food cravings intensify, and energy expenditure drops. Bullshit, bullshit, and bullshit if you're eating properly, but I digress. These adaptations evolved to optimize energy storage and usage in environments with fluctuating food availability. But today, with our easy access to cheap, calorie-dense junk food and sedentary routines, those same adaptations that once helped us to survive can cause us a few issues. Well, fucking duh! So, as we found in our recent research, our brains also have powerful mechanisms for defending body weight and can sort of remember what the weight used to be. Yeah. Okay, so now we're blaming our brains for our fat asses? Wow, this is some science! So for our ancient ancestors, this meant that if weight was lost in hard times, their bodies would be able to, quote, get back to their usual weight during better times. But for us modern humans, it means that our brains and bodies remember any excess weight gain as though our survival and lives depend upon it. So in effect, once the body has been heavier, the brain comes to treat that heavier weight as the normal weight, a level that it feels compelled to defend. This is such bullshit. The fact that our bodies have this capacity to, quote, remember our previous heavier weight helps to explain why so many people regain weight after dieting. No, it fucking doesn't. It's because they're still... You're binge fucking dieting, you're losing that 10 or 20 pounds, then you're going right the fuck back to eating the same shit you were eating before. And you gain the fucking weight back. QED, fat ass. So, but as the science shows, this weight regain is not due to a lack of discipline. Bullshit. Rather, our biology is doing exactly what it evolved to do, defend against weight loss. Yeah, of course, nothing about the fact we're eating things that aren't food. Exactly. Little note from Foam Boy. Like, you know, I wasn't going to already have covered that several times in the article, because dear God, we scream about it every week. But this, yeah, you did this on purpose. You fucking pulled this story and put it on me because you knew I was going to have a lot to say about it.
No, you know, we know how things work around here, you know, in mysterious ways.
That was just absolutely painful to see what they're calling science going, oh, you have another excuse to be fat and go on our drugs. It's because you can't help it. Your brain is making you fat. It's not the cupcakes and the Ho-Hos and the Twinkies that you're scarfing down. It's your brain. Right.
Well, anyway, that's a that. God, yeah. I mean, I just kind of like I say, some of these stories were just fucking painful, and I think this next one might not be quite as painful, but well, possibly. Okay, but this is we're talking about baby formula with the cleanest ingredients. It got recalled after 15 babies get botulism.
Nice execution.
You're doing terrific.
Now, the maker of a specialty baby formula that touted having the cleanest ingredients and a purity award is recalling all of its products and lots amid an ongoing multi-state outbreak of infant botulism. Now, the outbreak was initially announced over the weekend by California and federal health officials. At that time, 13 cases of infant botulism had been flagged across 10 states. But on Tuesday, the outbreak expanded to 15 cases in 12 states. All 15 infants had been hospitalized, but no deaths had been reported. The California Department of Public Health was the first to flag the outbreak. Now, the department is the world's sole source of infant botulism treatment called Baby Big, which is made of human-derived anti-botulism antibodies and is effective at easing symptoms and shortening recovery times. California health officials noted an unusual uptick in case reports and found they were linked to a specific formula, ByHeart Whole Nutrition Infant Formula. The department then did its own testing of some of the leftover formula, which was positive for the bacterium that causes botulism, which is a Clostridium botulinum. Infant botulism is a very rare disease that occurs when babies inhale or swallow spores of the toxin-producing bacteria that cause infant botulism, which leads to progressive muscle weakness, including trouble breathing if not treated in time, CDPH director and state public health officer Erica Pan said in a statement. We are urging parents to stop using ByHeart formula immediately. Now, ByHeart voluntarily recalled two lots of its whole nutrition and infant formula on November 8th, but Tuesday, with two new cases in two more states and more discussion with the Food and Drug Administration, the company issued a sweeping recall. We have decided to voluntarily recall all ByHeart formula nationwide. This includes both our cans and our single serve anywhere pack sticks. ByHeart's co-founders Mia Funt and Ron Beldergun said in an announcement on the company website. While the pair said the move was to ensure your baby's safety, they noted that neither the FDA nor the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention of Your Health have confirmed the presence of bacterial spores or toxins in any unopened cans of ByHeart formula. Now, ByHeart markets its formula by touting high-quality ingredients, rigorous quality and safety testing, apparently not for botulism, and purity, saying it tested for over 700 contaminants, apparently not botulism. Apparently, the company's products are used by a small slice of families, accounting for an estimated 1% of infant formula sales in the United States, according to the FDA. The small market share made it easier to flag them as potential culprits in the uptick in infant botulism cases. Now, given the babies given ByHeart formula accounted for over 40% of this year's infant botulism cases that had exposure to any powdered formula. Now, the company also previously had run afoul of the FDA, and in 2023, inspectors found significant safety violations in a contracted manufacturing facility. Now, it's also worth pointing out that the U.S. sees around 100 cases of botulism in infants each year, so this is not a huge problem, and it makes that 40, you know, more than 40, like, oh yeah, that looks really bad when 40%.
Really bad.
Yes. So I'm pretty sure that this was a PR stunt, a PR saving face as much as anything else.
Bigly, especially because of the fact that they're, you know, I love the way they're trying to talk out both sides of their faces, like, oh, well, they didn't find any of these, you know, bacterial spores or toxins in the unopened stuff. It might not have been us. No, it was definitely you. Like, there's not a doubt here. It was, you know, over 40% had been taking your formula. Yeah, but you know, they didn't find any, like, that feels like the argument there.
Yeah, something like that. Well, yeah. Okay. Now, of course, again, we have drugs for the fat man's cocktail coming up here.
We do, because metformin as a new standard of care to manage weight gain side effects of certain bipolar medications?
Drugs.
Yeah, they want to keep you on the drugs. So results from the largest and longest study of its kind have found that the drug metformin can help manage weight gain in overweight and obese youth taking medication to treat bipolar disorder and should be adopted as a standard of care treatment. Oh, brother. The work is published in the Lancet Psychiatry Journal. The project.
Are we surprised? I mean, come on.
No, that's why behind the mic I scratched my head like I'm not even going to say it. The project was led by University of Cincinnati and Cincinnati Children's Hospital researchers. Right. Okay. So now we definitely know what quality this particular project and study had. Medications to treat bipolar disorder, known as second-generation antipsychotics, SGAs, are often effective at helping young patients' mental health improve, but can have significant side effects, including elevated appetite and weight gain. The side effects can lead to patients not taking their meds, and the weight gain can lead to lifelong harmful health outcomes. Duh. Again, we're not talking about what are they eating, what are they being fed. The mobility study examined the use of metformin, a medication typically used for type 2 diabetes that's also known to prevent weight gain. Okay, time out. So basically, if you're having that weight gain problem, you're probably headed toward diabetes anyway. So this is kind of a preemptive treatment, question mark. They're just marketing it as a side effect treatment. I digress. Klein said the study had a pragmatic design, meaning it had broad enrollment criteria and was conducted at a wide variety of clinics, even those without prior participation in research studies such as community mental health clinics. A total of 1,565 patients aged 8 to 19 with bipolar disorder taking these meds were enrolled in the study. Oh, this is nauseating. Everyone enrolled in the trial received a brief health lifestyle intervention with recommendations for healthy eating and exercise. Now, we all know what their idea of healthy eating is, so we're not even going to go there. Half of the youth were randomized to receive metformin in addition to the healthy lifestyle intervention. 6 and 24-month follow-up data found patients in the metformin plus healthy lifestyle group had a greater chance greater change in their body mass index, Z-score, compared to participants who didn't receive metformin. Okay. Were they told that they were being given the metformin? Did I miss something here? Because I'm kind of wondering. I know this drug way too frigging well. And
well, I was...
this is hurting my brain. But
By the way, I have pulled up the list of side effects for metformin. I think this is
I'm going to let you read them as soon, because I have just one little bit more here. Yeah. So the interpretation of this is that the effect on weight is modest, but for most patients, the benefits of metformin outweigh the risks. Bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. A paid pharmacist, of course, is who said that.
Yes.
The suggestion is that clinicians prescribe metformin for youths who have bipolar spectrum disorders, who are overweight or obese, and are treated with a second-generation antipsychotic, the SGA. Metformin was also found to be well-tolerated with no major adverse events reported. The most common side effects reported were gastrointestinal issues, with some of these addressed by taking the medication with food or switching to an extended-release dose. Now, please, regale us with what the side effects of metformin are.
Well, my ex had to take the extended release version of this because of the gastrointestinal stuff. So that is actually very real. But so I went to drugs.com here, and this is I love doing this when we do these drugs. These are the more common side effects: abdominal or stomach discomfort, cough or hoarseness, decreased appetite, which might also help you with weight loss, right? Diarrhea, yeah, because it's bad for your... Fast or shallow breathing, no, that doesn't sound good. Fever or chills, no. General feeling of discomfort, no. Lower back or side pain or muscle pain or painful or difficult urination or sleepiness, no. Okay, let's get into the less common side effects. You got anxiety, blurred vision, chest discomfort, cold sweats, coma, confusion, cool pale skin, depression. Which probably needs, which.
You know. If you're bipolar, you already have. So great, you're going to worsen the condition that this, you're trading one evil for another.
Yes, exactly.
Because that
it's much like when they prescribe me this statins when they think I'm diabetic, because I'm going, well, I'm trying to reverse type 2 diabetes. I don't want to take a drug where that's a side effect.
Yeah, because here's the thing. If the SGA that they're taking is fighting against the metformin because one of the side effects is depression, that's an endless loop right there.
Well, you know, create the problem and the solution, honey. Let's see what we got here. Difficult or labored breathing, dizziness, fast or regular pounding, racing heartbeat, feeling of warmth, headache, increased hunger, increased sweating.
Whoa, wait. Increased hunger? I'm sorry. Aren't you supposed to be taking this drug so you're not eating like a fucking horse every 5 seconds?
Increased sweating. We got nausea, nervousness, nightmares, redness of the face, seizures, shakiness, slurred speech, tightness in the chest, unusual tiredness or weakness. Okay, so they've got rare side effects. Behavior changes similar to being drunk. That's interesting. Difficulty with concentrating, drowsiness, lack or loss of strength, restless sleep or unusual sleepiness. Why would you fucking... there's even more side effects, right? They don't... Yeah, you know, they talk about, like, weight... They actually mention it here on drugs.com. One of the more common side effects is weight loss. Yeah, because you don't want to fucking eat. Because you've got heartburn, you feel like shit. You've got your... Yeah, of course you don't want to fucking eat. Oh, my God, this is disgusting. Anyway,
And Cottingen appropriately points out it's easier to take a pill and convince yourself that it's the pill that's telling you not to eat than to just, not eat.
Yeah, exactly. So, however, I think I will put a link to this in the show notes, so that way we can, for those of you who want to see the side effects for yourself, I think it's actually worth you should definitely look at that, and we should definitely have a time code for that. But anyway, is it time to get happy yet? I think it is time to get happy.
It makes me happy that Sir Bemrose likes posting shit in the chat about, it's unpleasantly like being drunk. Well, what's so unpleasant about being drunk? Go ask a glass of water.
Yes. Yeah, the wisdom of Douglas Adams right there. So
that's right.
Okay. So, all right. So are we happy yet?
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
Fuck you.
All right. Now, we got happy teens. We got happy boys in this particular in this happiness segment, because we have a teen that was rewarded with cash and a job after turning in a wad of $3,500 without hesitation. Yeah. So from Australia's Gold Coast comes the story of an honest young man who handed over $3,500 he found at a gas station and was repaid manifold. Now, 17-year-old Josh Panchi was the first to notice a wad of Australian dollars sitting on the cement outside of Fox's pantry. The dough had fallen out of the pocket of a local tradesman, Daniel McKellar, who runs a demolition firm. McKellar had visited the convenience store in Tungan to buy a coffee on his way home from dropping off a load of scrap metal for recycling. Now, McKellar didn't notice the money had fallen out as he climbed back into his car and drove home along with his wife. And at just that time, Panchi arrived on his bicycle, noticed the cash, and turned it over to the teller without any hesitation. Now, not long after the tradesman called the shop on a wing and a prayer, asking if the money had been found, and received startling news. A young man handed it in rather than taking it for himself. But who was this underage Good Samaritan? McKellar had only the CCTV footage of Panche to go by. He took to Instagram to share his experience and asked, could anyone help him find this person? Now, it didn't take long for the internet's magic to work, and soon Panche's mother saw what had happened and reached out. McKellar wanted to offer Josh a $1,000 reward for his honesty. It's pretty rare to find the younger generation having a good moral compass and obviously knowing what to do, being the right thing to hand in the money, Mr. McKellar told news.com.au. Now, once face-to-face, McKellar gave Panche the $1,000 and heard that it was his goal to save up for a pickup truck. So he offered him a labor job through his contracting business, as well as launched a GoFundMe on behalf of the teen. It has since raised over $10,000 for the truck, just $1,100 short of its ultimate goal. In addition, McKellar took the other $2,500 that he had left over and donated to another GoFundMe to help fund brain surgery for an advanced cancer patient, reasoning that he had already made peace with the money being lost. Recovering it was a surprise and a blessing, but one he said he thought was the best to pay forward. Now, I was never expecting the money back. I thought once I lost it, I was expecting someone to have taken it, he explained. I definitely had no expectation to get it back, so in my mind, it was already gone, yeah. I mean,
that's beautiful.
Yeah, there's good people in the world. That's why we do this
segment. There is.
That's why we do this segment. I mean, that's exactly why. And the next, we got another, you know, another example of that coming up here.
We do, because a boy's great tagline helped to raise thousands for underprivileged kids to afford hockey.
I'm here on a mission of mercy.
A hockey-loving boy from a hockey-loving family is selling special hockey merch to help other hockey lovers, and he's loving it. Wow, there's a lot of love in there.
Got a whole lot of love.
His family took a childhood utterance as genius, as it was random, and spun it into a line of merch, with the proceeds going to charities that pay for gear, rink time, and team fees for kids who want to play hockey but whose families can't afford the expense. He's got a special fundraiser going at the moment, specifically for the children of veterans in honor of Veterans Day. 8-year-old Luke Graham is the son of John Graham, a goaltender who played for the Boston Bruins, hoo-yah, and the Tampa Bay Lightning. John's father was also a goaltender who played for the Boston Bruins as well as the LA Kings and Quebec Nordiques during the late 70s and early 80s. John's brother, Luke's uncle, is a scout for the Colorado Avalanche. There's a tongue twister. John and his mother, Charlotte, who also worked for the Avalanche, became the first mother-son duo to have both of their names engraved on the Stanley Cup, which John won as a goalie with the Lightning in 2004. That's pretty cool. So Luke's two older brothers both play, and Luke loved going to watch their games before he was old enough to hit the ice. But eventually, eagerness and frustration culminated in a now famous line. I'm tired of just being a rink dude, he said in frustration. That day, the rink dude brand was born. That is so cool. We thought maybe we could print a hat that said rink dude just for him, his mother, Nikki Graham, told CBS News Colorado. Then we thought, what if he sold a few and helped other kids who want to play hockey but can't afford it? Well, that's exactly what happened, and it was a huge success. Hockey's the most expensive youth sport, and nonprofits like Hockey Unlimited help underprivileged children bridge the financial gap made up by gear and fees to use ice rinks for training and pickup games. Rink Dude hats, shirts, and other merch featuring a cartoonized Luke Graham flexing his bicep sometimes make thousands of dollars in a week of sales, and each purchase comes with donation cards to Hockey Unlimited or other nonprofits. For Veterans Day, Luke focused on helping military families by channeling money to United Heroes League, a nonprofit that helps military kids active by providing gear, camps, grants, and special experiences. Our goal is $5,000 to raise for kids of veterans, Luke said, adding, veterans are heroes. Mrs. Graham wasn't surprised, saying he gets to feel the joy of helping others while doing something he loves. Aww.
That's a great
good
story.
Kid.
Yeah, that's a great, yeah.
And that's funny as fuck, dude. Like how just like an offhanded comment can become something so huge. That's yeah, cool.
That's, I mean, hell.
And the fact that like his dad played for the Bruins. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah, exactly. That's totally cool. Well, what's totally cool is we got a new cavalcade of stupidity from Rev Cybertrekkers.
I'm excited.
Let's hear what he has to say.
Hi-dee-ho, pedalheads, and welcome to Sir Reverend Cybertrucker's Cavalcade of Stupidity. Born on February 26, 1932, in Kingsland, Arkansas, Johnny Cash made his way up to be one of the most influential artists of all time. His genre-spanning music embraced country, rock and roll, rockabilly, blues, folk, and gospel sounds, with top hits such as Ring of Fire, Walk the Line, and Folsom Prison Blues. Honored with multiple Grammy Awards throughout his lifetime, Johnny was also inducted into both the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Country Music Hall of Fame. He is revered and remembered to this day as an incomparable legend in the music industry. Known for his deep, calm bass baritone voice, most of his music contains themes of sorrow, moral tribulation, and redemption, especially songs from the later stages of his career. However, Johnny had a humorous side, putting out songs such as One Piece at a Time and A Boy Named Sue. Written by Gary Gentry and released in 1984 as a single, with Battle of Nashville on the opposite side, this song reached number 45 on the U.S. Billboard's country chart. However, Cash would later admit that this was the only thing he ever recorded that he flat out hated. Described as Cash himself as intentionally atrocious, this is Johnny Cash, the Chicken in Black.
For 2 long years, my head hurt bad, so the doctor checked me and he shook his head. He said, I'm sorry to tell you, but your body's outlived your brain. He said, I know this doctor in New York, son, and he'll fix you right up with a brand new one. So the head doctor met me when I stepped down off of the train. He said, we had this bank robber killed last night. His body shot, but his brain's all right. I'll give you a transplant, boy, and you'll be okay. I got my new brain in, and I was feeling great. I went right back to Nashville with no headache, but something strange happened when I walked in the bank one day. I said, stick 'em up, everybody, I'm robbing this place.
Okay,
that sounds like it's going to be fun when we play it in Studio 33.
Also interesting that he kept it around 30 seconds, too, because it probably... Yeah, he was good like that. Yeah, he had a lot to say about that, too.
I was going to say, the intro was longer than the song clip.
Yeah, I know. We're talking about the Man in Black here, I didn't like this song. Well, it does happen sometimes. You know, sometimes you put out something and you go, oh, that was kind of a clunker.
Here's the thing. I have never heard that song, so I'm actually looking forward to it because my dad is a big Johnny Cash fan.
Yeah, neither have I, honestly. Like, if I'm honest, I haven't. There's probably a lot of Johnny Cash music I don't know about, but because he had a long career. But anyway, we'll play it in Studio 33.
Absolutely.
All right, it's time for Tales from Rideshare.
That's right. There did not come a lot out of Rideshare this week, but I do have one very amazing story that I learned about, and it is about a cancer cure. That's right, cure. There's a doctor in Florida who does what's known as nanosurgery, where basically he will take these very small metal rods and surround the cancer tumor and just bombard the hell out of it until it kills the tumor. And without chemo, without harming the other cells, it's truly a miracle. This is a $300,000 procedure, and insurance does not cover it. It's disgusting that this is, he's tried so many times to get the word out there about this particular cure. Now, the reason I know about it is because I had a rider whose friend actually paid out of pocket and had a, I think it was a prostate cancer tumor, just gone from like stage four and nothing's touching it to completely gone. Not just remission, gone. No trace. Poof. $300,000 and insurance companies will not cover it because we all know the money's not in the cure. It's in keeping you sick. And that's disgusting that this is out there for people whose lives could be saved. And how do you put a price on a life? Just saying. I don't know the doctor's name. I didn't get that information from my rider. But I thought it was worth highlighting.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of things that come up, and you know, I think in terms of like just that kind of stuff. I mean, yeah, there's. It seems like that there's just so we've kind of only scratched the surface of things, and I feel like we're, you know, there's been a lot of things that have been kind of suppressed for a while that, yeah, that might actually make a lot of this seem like child's play. But hopefully, but yeah, I always like to see promising, you know, ways to heal, because you know we're about doing that here at the Lotus Effect. You know, we try to heal ourselves, and you know, I don't know, maybe help other people heal themselves, you know, as you know,
exactly, yeah.
and laugh at ourselves.
I feel
too.
Like, but you know what, I feel like we're getting the message out there about things like, you know, sugar feeding cancer, and big pharma is literally just an endless loop, and you know, don't get swept away in it. You know, it's never too late to fix your diet and your movement regimen, if you will.
Exactly. Well, it's time for us to toast and jam, I think.
Let's do it.
Well, I'm a bum in the sun, and I'm having fun, and I know you know I got no special plans.
Special plans!
Yeah, we don't have any special plans, but to sit here, well, we're going to play some music, of course, when we get to the end of the show and play and do in Studio 33. But, this is where, if you haven't called in yet to 253-237-3321, and you're listening live, yeah, you might, and even if you're not listening live, yeah, you can, and you haven't weighed in on this week's topic of what's your favorite Thanksgiving pie. Well, this is your call to do that, because we'll play that in the next segment, which is called the weigh-in segment.
That's right.
And of course, with some people, you might want to weigh. If you weigh in after that Thanksgiving meal, you might have gained a few pounds if you're not careful.
More than likely.
Yeah. All right. So what are we eating tonight, honey?
I'm making like actual food that's cooked.
We're going to Denny's.
It's funny that you mentioned, and I had. This was certainly by accident, purely. We're actually having shepherd's pie for dinner, forgetting that our weigh-in topic was favorite Thanksgiving pie. So I thought the irony was not lost on that. But yep, we are having that wonderful dish that my dumbass forgot to put cheese in the meat or onions. I really phoned this fucking thing in, phone boy. I swear to God. I wish I could say it was going to be like...
It's like an orgy in my mouth and everybody's coming.
Oh, it's an orgy. Got it. Yeah, I don't think it's going to be an orgy. I forgot the cheese in the meat. I forgot the onions in the meat. It's going to be the most bland, basic fucking food. I'm so sorry.
Well, we're still going to eat it anyway.
I had a lot of shit going on, arguably. I really just... Oh, God. I don't even want to talk about...
Yeah, let's not.
Why I was so distracted this morning. So we should probably talk about the silly argument. It wasn't even really an argument that we had about gas prices.
Yeah, we were because we live very near to a gas station, and so therefore we see the price of the gas, and it's like the gas prices are kind of like, I don't know, all over the place around here. It seems like there's some place, you know,
they wave like a flag. I swear to God, up and down.
Yeah. So anyway, so it's something that, you know, when one of us goes out, it's something that gets pointed out is usually the price of gas has moved one direction or another. At least it seems to. And so we were having, you were saying, it's like, oh, it went up 10 cents.
Yep.
And I'm like, I don't think it did. And we kind of went back and forth about it. I said, well, you know, I have a receipt in the car.
Yeah, that I'm like, you do realize I fueled last night before it went up. I can literally prove I'm right by the fact the price is printed on the receipt. And he started laughing hysterically. He was like, you know, in all the arguments I've had about things, I don't think I've ever actually literally had a receipt to prove it.
I just thought it was it was just one of these funny things that happened with us that is, the random joy things. This is what we do. I don't know. I mean, we look at things funny take those little moments of, you know, where they, you know, I don't know, one, you know, some people could get all frustrated about it or argue about it. We just kind of laugh at it and go, okay.
Exactly.
This is the way it should be. Right? It should be simple and easy. Did we have anything else this week that's worth toasting and jamming?
It's interesting. We didn't. I mean, there's usually at least a short list of stuff that we did. What did we do this week? I'm completely at a loss to remember anything monumental other than we went to Romo's twice. I mean, that was,
We have to, talk. Well, first of all,
yes. Okay. So this is kind of a little toast and jam mixed with some tales from rideshare, because the night in question with the receipt, I happened to also pick up a screw in my tire. So as I'm leaving the gas station, because I have one of those bougie ass cars that tells you that, yeah, you have low air, and then tells you how much pound wise you have in your tire. I made it home. I had like 26 pounds in it. And for whatever reason, Foam Boy, God love him, decided instead of looking at the tire to establish, yep, it's definitely flat, we need to put the donut on it. No, he decides, by the way, you got fucking lucky. It did not fuck the rim up.
Yeah, I knew that. I was like, yeah, I recognize it.
He decides to drive on this tire, folks, probably about 2 or 3 miles at best.
No, it was less than two, because I know
was
from
it less than two.
Yeah, because I from our house to yeah.
So we'll call it two for a round number. Yeah. But he basically drives like 2 miles on this fucking tire before realizing, first of all, figuring out, because he was driving the car to the tire place. I'm trying to explain to him on my steering wheel where the little horizontal flippy lever is to change the screen on my dash so that you can see the tire pressures, because it's kind of important. He figures it out and goes, oh, I should probably not drive anymore. It's down to 1 pound. My face slid off.
Yeah.
And then I had to go help him to figure out where to put the jack, because it's got one of those stupid little scissor jacks. And there's a specific little place. There's notches. You put it in between the notches, etc. E pluribus unum. Yeah. Not a lot of fun. But at some point in this journey of dropping my car off, because by the time this all occurs, first of all, remembering that I had a flat tire issue from the night before, and actually going to the tire place, yeah, they were not going to be able to get it done that day. So I was like, can I just drop it off and pick it up in the morning? They're like, yeah. So that's ultimately what we did on a donut tire. In the meantime of which, I'm like, you want to just go to Romo's for dinner? I'm like, I'm just kind of not feeling like cooking after this shit.
Yeah, we were already there. It was a medical condition. We're like,
we truly were just 2 moments away.
Yeah, it was like, okay, yeah, when you said that we were driving out to the place, to the tire place, I'm like, yeah, it seems like, yeah, it's in, yeah, we did the, and then we did Romo, as I said, we did Romo's on like Monday night.
Because, we literally did Romo's twice in 1 week. It was such an anomaly.
Yeah, well, we did that because it was actually the, I think we did it on Monday because it was fucking.
Monday was because we had neglected to pull anything out for dinner, I think, because we got so busy. I ended up having to take a snow day Monday because, yeah, it actually fucking snowed here on the plateau to the point where the roads were kind of crappy. And I kind of decided, yeah, no, I value my car, my life, etc., a lot more than taking a knee on a snow day. So I got a lot of other stuff done, which I was glad for, because I realized I had an assignment that was due.
Yes.
On Tuesday that I had neglected to keep up with, so kind of caught a lucky break with that one. It wasn't anything huge. It was just EV science, but whatever.
Exactly. Well, and I think, okay, so...
And we finally managed to get the philosophy project turned in. So we are truly almost at the end of semester, and it feels so amazing because it has been just such a juggling act. Yeah, that one wasn't actually because of a Tokes or Bemrose. He just, for whatever reason, he's having throat issues.
Yeah, so I need more water is basically what it comes down to.
Hydrate, sir. Hydrate.
Yes, I'm going
to. But, yeah. You know, you might need to hydrate after you eat all of this pie because I know all that sugar makes you thirsty.
Yeah, it probably does. But I think we have to actually get into that segment first, right?
We do because...
The world needs a wake-up call. We're going to phone it in.
To 253-237-3321. Now, so Mama's voice shy, so she likes to text. She says... Let's say, oh, that's actually, okay, wait a minute. That's a voicemail. Okay, hold on. I gotta
Oops, did you transcript?
No. I just need to get the right thing. Okay, so this is from Mama, and she says, I don't like pumpkin pie at all. My favorite pie is cherry, but I know that's not a traditional Thanksgiving pie. If I were sticking with that theme, I'd go with apple. Now,
I actually, if we're going to make a trip to see Mama, I've got some apple pie filling in jars that I canned, and it's still very viable. I might have to bring her one so that she can maybe get a Pillsbury pre-made crust and... Or make her own crust. I mean, maybe she wants to do that. I don't know how she rolls, but yeah, a good old apple pie for the holiday if we happen to get down there before the holiday. I don't know yet.
So okay, I have because honestly, my favorite pie is cherry pie. Right? That is. I'm not sure where that. Last night we had the tart cherry bourbon ale or something. Anyway, that was actually pretty. At first it was a little much, and then it started tasting really good. I don't know. Anyway, I like cherries, and in fact, I volunteered at some sort of a thing that was going on in high school. It was in front of the entire school. It was a And then they asked me what my favorite kind of pie is right now. And this is there is a lot of degenerate people in the audience screaming things like hair. And I kind of looked at the teacher. I looked at them and I looked at the teachers and I said, cherry. I got a round of applause. I think it was the strangest thing ever. Right. So, yes. So my love of cherry pie was just like, and like I said, it's an honest answer because I love cherry pie, and I was acknowledging acknowledging the people and the other, the real degenerates and going, yeah, cherry.
So Fumboy, I have a question.
Yeah.
Am I your cherry pie?
You brought a smile on my face 10 miles wide. I'll tell you that. Okay. Yes. Okay. Now let's play some voicemails.
Favorite pie for Thanksgiving. Oh man. I don't know. Phoenix, phone boy. Salutations, greetings, whatnot. I don't know. I can't have a favorite. It's like my wife and mother-in-law, if they go all out on pies, man, there's a lot of pies to make. Or they have a lot of pies. But, first one though that came to mind was like a pecan pie. You just ride in and, make it taste homemade sort of thing. You know, not just like, oh, yeah, it's just a, quote, healthier pecan pie like than from the store kind of deal. You get my drift. Unless that was a fart that you got. I apologize about that. I like all pies. We're talking like dessert pies, Sure, meat pies are good too, but, I don't think we're talking about those. Probably not the default, you know what I mean, so anyway, that's it, it's pies, they're good, and then of course homemade whipped cream, gotta have that, preferably, now that once you had it, you know, but if not, the can's fine, but I don't make any of this stuff, so, Cheesers can't be beggars, right? Anyway. All right. Love you guys. Stay dangerous. And whether or not you did that fun little 3:30 to 8:30 shift in the morning, just because you could get the overtime. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Anyway, all right, love you guys. Stay dangerous, and whether or not it's a real tree that's made into a prop or it's a real tree that's in the dirt, go ahead, give a hearty, hearty ca-ca!
Kaka! I love the fact that he's like, all pies, they're all good.
So we have two potential show titles here: Permit Pies and Teachers Can't Be Beggars. I thought those were
that sounds good.
Yeah, so okay, we have more voicemails. We have more voicemails. We have a voicemail from this pedalhead.
It occurs to me that this is kind of a short form, you know, just a couple of words questions, and that's, I don't know. I don't want to say that's boring, but it there needs to be a story in here somewhere. So I'm going to provide a story about pie. It's really more than about pie, but pie figures in pretty predominantly. So anyway, so as some of you know, I used to work in nursing homes as an aide several years ago, and this is going back, probably almost 15 years ago now. One of my patients was a woman named Chiquita, and Chiquita had a stroke and a couple other things happened to her, and she was largely paralyzed, and she had to eat pureed food, and it was such an effort for her to speak that she normally just didn't bother. But you could tell from looking at her, she had her mind, she could follow the conversation, you know, and she would nod and shake her head and participate in certain ways that she could. So Thanksgiving rolls around, and I'm assigned to feed Chiquita. And Chiquita's husband was there. Their son had flown in, and he brought his wife with him. So I'm sitting on Chiquita's right. Husband is sitting to her left, and the son and daughter-in-law are sitting across the table. And I had been taught, you know, whenever you got, especially with pureed food, you can't always tell what it is you're looking at. So you say, you know, okay, well, here's a bite of this, you know, here's a spoonful of that, this one is sweet tea, this one's juice, you know, what have you. It's a dignity thing, you know. So I'm feeding Chiquita, and I'm telling her what each bite is. And after about 5 minutes, the daughter-in-law stops, and she goes, oh, I don't know why you're talking to her. It's not like she can understand a word you're saying. Y'all, Chiquita, like I said, normally it was too much effort for her to speak. She found the effort, and I was dying inside because I'm trying so hard to not laugh at this. So the next time I go, you know, I ignore the comment because it's like, you know, you don't want to get involved in family politics. It's, you know, you got to be professional and all that. So I ignore the comment, and I go to give Chiquita a spoonful of turkey and dressing, told her what it was. Chiquita eats it, and she says, yum. Okay. That kind of got everybody's attention, but it could have been a fluke, right? So I go to get another spoonful, and she says, potatoes, please. Oh, okay.
Okay, well, there.
Sounds like she hit the time limit.
She hit the 3-minute time limit, but she called back though.
I hit the time wall. Anyway, so Chiquita's speaking now, and I'm all in support of this. So I'm just sitting there acting like it's the most natural fucking thing in the world. Like she talks all the time, and she is going through, you know, each time I go to give her a bite, she's like, yes, please, no, please, thank you, no, thank you. And the daughter-in-law is sitting there getting redder and redder and redder, like from her hairline down her ears, down her chest. She's just like beet fucking red with embarrassment. The son kind of like is just sitting there like, I don't know what to do. The husband is sitting there with this big shitty grin on his face because he knew he didn't have to defend her because she was holding her own pretty good. We get done with the plate, and I say, okay, well, we've got pumpkin pie and sweet potato pie for dessert. And she goes, pumpkin, please. Okay, do you want whipped cream on top? Ooh, yes, please. You got it. Be right back. So I come back with the dish with the, you know, pumpkin filling in it and the whipped cream on top. And she eats about maybe four bites, and she says, no, thank you. I'm done. All right, cool. I said, I go, okay, well, do you want to sit with your family and visit for a while? And she says, no, I'm tired. Bed, please. And she proceeds to look this daughter-in-law in the face and just stares her down for about 30 seconds. Oh, my God, y'all. Chiquita became one of my heroes that day. I swear to God. So every time I have pumpkin pie, I think it's Chiquita. Talk to y'all later. Bye.
That's a great story.
Now I want pumpkin pie in favor of this great, strong woman.
Yeah, that's a great story.
It is.
And it's also what, you know, this is what happens when you treat people with dignity, right? It's like, look.
Like human beings.
Yeah, treat them like human beings. This is what we need to be doing, right? Is, you know, yeah, don't, you know, don't we, treat people with respect, but, you know, I mean, don't take their shit either, right? And it just, but
yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of, there's a balancing act there. And I think we, you know, again, we need to, you know, we need to stop taking people's bullshit. I mean, seriously. All right, here we have we've got another caller here.
Well, hold on.
Oh, sorry.
Before you do that, Cotton Gin did weigh in the chat. He said that his favorite Thanksgiving pie is pumpkin and or apple, and that they used to get apples from a nearby orchard. That's pretty groovy, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. He did say that in the chat.
Did you try again?
No, because nobody fucking triggered you, you goddamn psycho.
Yes, no kidding.
However, Bemlet weighed in and said pumpkin pie, homemade. Hell yeah, has to be homemade. None of this store-bought shit.
Yeah, no kidding. It's, you know, you got to do that. All right, so now I can play the next caller.
Hey, guys. My favorite pie is either Dutch apple or a pumpkin. Those are my two favorite pies for the holidays. Love you guys. Have a good show. Bye.
Bye, Wiganator. All right, thanks. Thank you for...
Yes, and anyone who doesn't know what a Dutch apple pie is, it's an apple pie that has a crumb topping instead of a top pie.
Right, exactly.
Top crust. Duh. I would say it's probably like a cross between an apple crisp and an apple pie.
By the way, I like pecan pie too, Sir Bemrose. That's a good one. All right, we got one more call.
Favorite Thanksgiving pie. Is that what it is today? Yeah, favorite Thanksgiving pie. I like cherry pie. That's probably my favorite. I'm a real big fan of the cheesecakes. Let's see. Baby, what's your favorite pie? Chocolate pie? Like, what kind of chocolate pie, though? Like, mousse? Like, silk chocolate pie? Oh, that was fucking fire. Caramel apple pie? Poodle, what's your favorite pie? Come on. Pumpkin pie. Yeah? Bunny, what's your favorite pie? Pumpkin, more pumpkin pie. What about sweet potato pie? No, yes, you have. Same damn thing. Sweet potato pie is amazing. Let's see. I really like, what do they call that? What is the pudding mixed with the Cool Whip? What is? That's something. Is that chocolate silk? I don't know. I've made that before. It's pretty good. Then I actually I like rhubarb pie. Yeah, it's got that little tart tanginess to it. I like me some rhubarb pie. Blackberry, that's got a little bitter to it too. I like that. I just really like pie. I really like pie. All the pie. Yeah, wink, wink. Yeah, mommy pie is my favorite. So, Yeah, that's pies, man. Pies are great. I love pie. Yeah. I feel like I'm missing something important about the pies. Oh. There's another pie. Pecan pie? Ooh, yeah. Pecan pie. That's not all the pies, bro. There's so many pies. Anyway, yeah. Pie. Bye.
Bye.
It's not a pecan. A pecan is what you squat over in the field. It's a pecan.
Yes.
Aunt Marie screaming in my head, but anyway.
I love pecan pie, but anyway.
Too sweet.
Yeah, this is very sweet. That is. Yeah.
All you have to do is look at, like, I make everything homemade that I can, and all you have to do is just look at that pie when you're pouring it into the shell, and you're just like, getting diabetes thinking about it.
I probably couldn't eat it anymore because.
No, I promise you, you would probably take a bite and be like, that isn't, you might not even be able to swallow it. It is so despicably sweet.
Exactly.
And with the fact that you don't consume sweet hardly at all. Like, yeah.
Exactly. Well, okay.
Mama likes blackberry pie, apparently. That's cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, blackberry.
So what would be your answer for the favorite?
I don't know. I mean, that's a good, I would have to go kind of the non-traditional route and go cherry, honestly. That's because that's what I like.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, but, yeah, I mean, a pecan pie might be too much. Well, even, I mean, a cherry pie is probably too much anymore, but if I had to pick something, yeah.
Right. Okay, so I'm going to go way off the reservation with something people probably, maybe Faizilla may have heard of it before. It's called hillbilly pie, and you make it just about identical to a pecan pie, except for you use oatmeal instead of pecans. It is fucking phenomenal. Not saying that's my favorite, but it's definitely worth a nod to being a damn good pie. As far as, like, I'm a purist, love pumpkin pie. You know, when I was eating the hot fresh garbage, like, pumpkin pie for the win. Also, big fan of cheesecake, even though that's not technically a pie. There is something known as a cheese pie. It's kind of like a no-bake cheesecake in a way. It's really yummy. It's like four ingredients in a graham cracker shell. But anyway, yeah, I'm, like I said, I'm kind of a purist. I've always been the pumpkin pie and homemade whipped cream, or I'll even take the shake 'em can whipped cream. Like, that's fine. I'll just tip the can up and just into my mouth.
You and me both.
You know, my inner child really comes out when a whipped cream can is involved.
Yeah, I like me some cheesecake. My mom had a great cheesecake recipe. One of those things, you know, it's one of those things I wish I could get back. But anyway, that's a. But all right, I think it's time. I'm getting the munchies, honey. I think it's because.
Yeah, I think it's all this pie talk. So we should probably do the reverse now that we have fulfilled what we're gonna have for the munchies. Let's get high.
I'll take a drink, and my name's Smoke Little Reef. You know, I like to smoke reefer. You know, it relaxes me and everything. A couple of doobies, you know, just to get you through the day and everything. But I do not freebase cocaine.
That's right. We're no freebasing cocaine over here. However, did you know, and yes, this is actually a story, did you know that you don't need Duolingo to learn Spanish? All you need is some weed and a comedian.
English, motherfucker! Do you speak it?
We got high, legally, because we have medical cards, and walked into the Movistar Arena in Buenos Aires. 13,000 people, sold out, phones locked away, the place humming with expectation. When the lights went down, the room erupted. Full body laughter, the kind you feel in your ribs. Somewhere between the lights and the first joke, we looked at each other and thought the same thing. This is a better Spanish lesson than any app. Not because anyone's memorizing vocabulary, because high tends to strip away the urge to overthink and makes you listen, and that's the whole trick. Lucho Malera, a comedian on stage, is a master of crowd work. Argentine, viral, and currently on a global run that includes U.S. dates in 2026. He spends large stretches of the show off the script. He hunts for moments. He talks to strangers in the front row and builds entire bits from single details. Every night is different. Every clip becomes content. Every audience member becomes part of the material. This is immersion. performed live. You do not translate. You keep up. This is a practical chemistry to what happened in that arena. Cannabis lowers social anxiety. Laughter spikes dopamine and sharpens associative thinking. Language is pattern recognition. Put those elements together and you get a potential learning environment.
A potent learning environment.
I'm sorry, a potent learning environment. Well, it's a potential too, if you think about it. So apps teach words in isolation. A comedian and a crowd teach content, cadence, timing, and slang. He shapes material on the fly, adjusting speed, using gestures and tone so meaning becomes clear. And the arena functions like a live tutor. Language learning by osmosis. Zero shame, zero perfectionism. These are two kinds of language learner, or there are two kinds of language learners in America. People who open an app and people who walk into live culture. Only one group is having fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is, and you know, and I this story because, and Mama's right. It's like, yeah, when the show is kind of, yeah, sometimes you have to keep up with us, right? I mean, it
truly.
Is, and that's exactly what, you know, when I saw this, I'm like, yeah, this is exactly it. Because of course, what does the holy herb do? Is it lowers your inhibitions. Some, and I won't say inhibitions, but it opens your mind and opens your, so that you can, and it does kind of slow you down. And sometimes in order to keep up, you got to kind of focus. And so things, you slow yourself down. And so, yeah, you can actually, a lot of things have occurred with this. And honestly, there's a reason I think they've spent so much time demonizing this plant, because honestly, like, in order to, you know, I don't know, in order to reach a higher consciousness, you know, within your daily life, yeah, you need to expose yourself to it. And one of the ways you do that is the holy herb, right? And so they've taken this plant, right, that you should be able to grow like a fucking tomato, and we'll talk about that in the next story. You should be able to, you know, this is not something that should even be fucking illegal. But they've spent so much time demonizing it for obvious reasons, I think. I'm not surprised. But using this kind of stuff when you're trying to learn something, or even just, you know, and yeah, imagine it makes things a lot, it would make things a lot better. So yeah, why not? I mean, who says you can't learn while you're getting, you know, while you're getting baked? I mean, come on. I mean,
and I mean, if that works for you, then I definitely recommend it. I unfortunately cannot get baked and then try to learn something. It does not work for me. I have tried.
Okay, well, either way. So this is one of those, you know, it doesn't work for everybody. Consult your drug dealer. Anyway, that's a different thing. All right. This story is going to cause us to rage, folks. Because Trump, yes, we're talking about Trump here. Trump signs a bill to recriminalize hemp THC products years after approving their legalization.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
Smoke weed every day.
All right, so President Donald Trump has signed a spending bill that includes provisions to ban most consumable hemp products. Following a historic weeks-long government shutdown, the Senate approved the appropriations package on Monday to fund critical agencies. The House of Representatives followed suit on Wednesday, voting 222 to 209 to pass the bill. Tucked inside the legislation is a controversial section to recriminalize hemp products containing THC that have proliferated since the crop was legalized under the 2018 farm bill that Trump signed during his first term in office. The president's latest action reverses that move. Now, Representative Andy Harris, a Republican of Maryland, who championed the prohibition in the House, said on the floor ahead of the vote that the provision closes the hemp loophole that has resulted in the spread of unregulated, intoxicating hemp-derived products that are being sold online and in gas stations and corner stores across the country.
This guy's a fucking idiot.
Many of these products are accessible and attractive to children, he argued. Hemp advocates have said, however, that the ban will apply even to non-intoxicating CBD products that people use for medicinal reasons. While the hemp ban is only one component of the proposal, a White House spokesperson said on Monday that the president supports the specific language. Now, there were attempts by GOP lawmakers in both chambers to strike the hemp provision. A prohibition provision, but the proposed amendments from Senator Rand Paul and Thomas Massey did not make it into the final package. Now,
interesting, both from Kentucky, both Republican.
Yes. That said, the bill as drafted makes it so that hemp provisions won't be implemented until 1 year after enactment. Stakeholders and certain lawmakers, such as Senator Chris Van Hollen, a Democrat of Maryland, say that window could provide an opportunity to advance legislation to create an alternative regulatory model for consumable hemp products. Now, the new legislation specifies that within 1 year of enactment, the weight will apply to total THC, including Delta 8 and other isomers. It will also include any other cannabinoids that have similar effects or are marketed to have similar effects on humans or animals as a tetrahydrocannabinol, as determined by the Secretary of Health and Human Services. Oh, great. The new definition of legal hemp will additionally ban any intermediate hemp-derived cannabinoid products which are marketed or sold as a final product or directly to an end consumer for personal or household uses, as well as products containing cannabinoids that are synthesized or manufactured outside of the cannabis plant or not capable of being naturally produced by it. Okay, legal hemp products will be limited to a total of 0.4 milligrams per container of total THC or any other cannabinoid with similar effects.
What a dickhead. I'm just saying it right now. Fuck 47, this fucking guy. Okay? This is a real dem dick sucking move. And he's a Republican. So that's some pretty hard suction, folks. Now, Rev Cybertrucker actually had a theory. Because he said every time that he does some shit like this, okay, he opens up something else. Kind of like when a door closes, a window opens type thing. Okay? He thinks it might be that this is a preemptive move to just totally, like you said, be able to grow hemp like a tomato. I mean, I would love if that were the case, but I'm not positively looking at this. Like, I'm not optimistic at all that this is not going to be a butt fuck of a move. The only way I can see this not fucking shit is if he does a full government legalization or just let us have full-on fucking THC, but we know that's never going to happen.
Well, okay, yeah, I'm kind of with Rev on this one. I think that, I mean, there's certainly a possibility, and yeah, Trump does kind of play, you know, does the jujitsu, so it's not unlike him to do something like that. So I'm kind of with Rev on this, and I also think, yeah, there's certainly, I think with all of the other things that are going on or that will be going on, yeah, I suspect this might be something that is that this actually does happen. So. But again, we just have to wait and see, right? I mean, we don't know. We're all subject to this bullshit. It sucks. It is what it is.
Well, the problem that I have is that unless you're going to go full legalization and not just decrim, not just desked, like just be done. Let us have it. There's no reason to take the hemp away. I think it's a shitty excuse that it's marketable to kids and it's appealing. Guess what, dickhead? The only fucking reason, so are cigarettes. So are the nicotine vapes. But guess what? You have to show ID in order to purchase it, dumb fuck. So guess what else? They're not just getting a hold of it because it's at the gas station. You have to show ID. You have to prove you're old enough to purchase the product. So this is a weak-ass fucking argument.
It is. I agree. let's. I think we had to apply our own advice here earlier, so we should probably time to go to the Lotus Tech Tip segment.
Hello, IT. Have you tried turning it off and on again? Have you tried sticking it up your arse?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of sticking it up your arse when it comes to tech lately, like we said. We had to heavily jiggle handles to get things working in the studio before the show. But a huge cannabis hack exposed 380,000 people. And now there is a company that is paying hackers to attack it.
Nothing is actually impenetrable.
Earlier this year, a breach known as the Great Cannabis Hack exposed the personal data of more than 380,000 cannabis consumers across North America. The attack, first reported by Forbes cybersecurity writer Davey Winder, targeted several third-party software vendors that power online ordering and loyalty platforms for dispensaries. According to Winder's investigation, the leaked databases included names, emails, phone numbers, and purchase histories, many linked to verified customer accounts and loyalty programs. Though no payment data was exposed, the breach illustrated how much sensitive information is stored across the cannabis tech systems and how little visibility most consumers have into how that data is managed. for regulators and retailers alike, it was a wake-up call. Cannabis companies have built digital infrastructures that rival those of mainstream retailers, but few have developed the same security culture. Now, Swede, one of the leading retail tech platforms in the industry, is trying to change that dynamic by launching cannabis's first bug bounty program, a formal invitation for ethical hackers to test its defenses before criminals do. Announced November 10th and hosted on Hackenproof, the initiative invites vetted security researchers from around the world to probe Swede's core web infrastructure. The company will pay up to $2,000 for verified vulnerabilities, depending on their severity, following the same CVSS, Common Vulnerability Scoring System, standard used in mainstream tech. All testing must stay within the defined scope and avoid disrupting live operations, but researchers are otherwise encouraged to, quote, hack away. Swede's platform powers point-of-sale, e-commerce, and marketing systems for dispensaries and multi-location operators. Those services handle vast amounts of personal and regulatory data, making them attractive targets for attackers. The bounty program transforms that vulnerability into a continuous collaborative audit, a way to test the system in real time. Now, bug bounty programs are standard practice in Silicon Valley. Google, Meta, and Apple have all paid millions to white hat hackers who disclose flaws responsibly. Even the U.S. DOD runs Hack the Pentagon.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, it's, I mean.
Hack the Pentagon sounds like a game to me.
Exactly, no kidding.
Just saying.
Yeah, but this was one of those, okay, it was, yeah, there was a lot of bleed through in the stories in the back half of the script because there's a lot of.
I love the way Bemrose is trolling as he does. And reminds us about the Ryanair story where they're literally only going to be allowing boarding passes through their app. And if you have to use a counter and get a paper pass or some shit, they're going to charge you like £55 or something. These twats are out of control.
Yeah, they are. Well,
we were going to bring it to you here in Lotus Tech Tips, but since Sir Bemrose so nicely covered
it was a junk drawer story that I had it as because it was.
Oh, it's kind it was?
Of, yeah, I had it as a junk drawer
story. Well, irrelevant. It was going to be covered on our show today, yeah. But it was eloquently covered by Sir Bemrose on 2.5 Bens last night.
That's right, which is, yeah, so you go to 2.5Bens.com and episode 11, that's where this occurred. All right, so this might have been the story I actually swapped in because I had to kind of juggle the stories around in the script. So five AI developed malware families analyzed by Google failed to work and are easily detected.
Everything was revealed. The secret of the perfect hack.
Yeah. So Google on Wednesday revealed five recent malware samples that were built using generative AI. The end results of each one were far below par with professional malware development, a finding that shows that vibe coding of malicious wares lags behind more traditional forms of development and thus still has a long way to go before it poses a real-world threat. All right. One of the samples, for instance, tracked under the name PromptLock, was part of an academic study analyzing how effective the use of large language models can be to autonomously plan, adapt, and execute the ransomware attack lifecycle. Yeah, the researchers, however, reported that the malware had clear limitations. It omits persistence, lateral movement, and advanced evasion tactics and served as little more than a demonstration of the feasibility of AI for such purposes. Now, prior to the paper's release, security firm ESET said that it had discovered the sample and hailed it as the first AI-powered ransomware. Oh, okay, where's the website and theme song for it? Like the other four samples, Google analyzed Fruit Shell, Prompt Flux, Prompt Steel, and Quiet Vault. You know, all of those names sound like that they're generated by AI.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. It also sounds like something that might come out of the Chinesium factory. And, you know, anyway, Prompt Lock was easy to detect even by the less sophisticated endpoint protections that rely on static signatures. All samples also employed previously seen methods in malware samples, making them easy to counteract. They also had no operational impact, meaning they didn't require defenders to adopt new defenses. So they didn't really do much of anything. What this shows us is that more than 3 years into the generative AI craze, threat development is painfully slow. Independent researcher Kevin Beaumont told Ars Technica, and if you're paying malware developers for this, you'd be furiously asking for a refund, as this does not show a credible threat or movement toward a credible threat. Another malware expert who asked not to be named agreed that Google's report did not indicate that generative AI is giving developers of malicious wares a leg up over those relying on more traditional development practices. Now, AI isn't making it any scarier than normal malware, the researcher said. It's just helping malware authors do their job. Nothing novel. AI will surely get better, but when and by how much is anybody's guess? Now, the assessments provide a strong counterargument to the exaggerated narratives being trumpeted by AI companies. Many seeking new rounds of venture funding that AI-generated malware is widespread and part of a new paradigm that poses a current threat to traditional defenses. Oh, boy.
Well, hold on, because here's the thing. Okay, AI is actually doing really good, okay, with malware. It lets it in very well.
Yes, this is true. Yeah, it seems to be doing...
Hey, Google, what's my password?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and yeah, there's so many things I could say about this, but yes, I mean, basically, yeah, at least, you know, we use these systems. These systems, they call them hallucinations, right? No. They're not hallucinations. They're lies. They're things that are not true. And yet they have to come up with this. It's kind of like the George Carlin shell shock and post-traumatic stress disorder and, you know, and battle fatigue or whatever the, you know, basically like taking all the words away to make it sound like it's something that's less than it really is. It's lying, right? And you create these things, you're having stuff that lies when it creates code, and it's like, you want to fucking rely on this shit? Oh, my goodness. Anyway. All right.
Sorry, not sorry. I love setting up the androids.
Yes.
Cotton Gin confirmed I set his phone off. His thing said, sorry, I can't tell you your password.
Nice. Hey.
I did it.
You did it. All right. Let's go to the junk drawer, please.
Humanity was incapable of solving even its most basic problems, like garbage, which had been stacked for centuries.
It's not the first time you've done that either.
No, it isn't. I did it last week to Wookiee and Fazila's phone. I'll keep doing it because fuck Android and Windows and Google and Microsoft. But the whole reason I say fuck Google... Yeah, they're vowing to stop scam, EasyPass, and USPS texts that are plaguing Americans.
Fool you!
Google is suing to stop phishing attacks that target millions globally, including campaigns that fake toll notices, offer bogus e-commerce deals, and impersonate financial institutions. In a complaint filed Wednesday, the tech giant accused, quote, a cyber criminal group in China, wow, how many of us are surprised it's the Chiners, of selling phishing for dummies kits. The kits help unsavvy fraudsters easily execute a large-scale phishing campaign, tricking hordes of unsuspecting people into disclosing sensitive information like passwords, credit card numbers, or banking info, often by impersonating well-known brands, government agencies, or even people the victim knows. Here's an idea, folks. If somebody contacts you, supposedly being someone you know, reach out to that person. Drop a dime. Yeah, I'm old. Give him a call. Hey, Joe, you just messaged me. Hey, no? All right, cool. It's real simple, folks. Use your brains. Now, these branded Lighthouse kits offer two versions of software, depending on whether bad actors want to launch SMS and e-commerce scams. Members may subscribe to weekly, monthly, seasonal, annual, or permanent licenses. Google alleged, kits include hundreds of templates for fake websites, domain setup tools for those fake websites, and other features designed to dupe victims into believing that they're entering sensitive information on a legitimate website. Here's also an idea. If you think that this place is contacting you, go directly to their website. Do not click the link. Never enter your information into a link that you yourself have not typed in. And Also, like Sir Bemrose said last night, how about we don't do the CAPTCHA where we copy-paste someone else's fucking code into our own browser? How about that? So, Google's filing said the scams often begin with a text claiming that a toll fee is overdue or a small fee must be paid to redeliver a package. We've gotten these messages, Phoneboy and I'm sure all y'all have. Other times, they appear as ads, sometimes even Google ads, until Google detected and suspended the accounts, luring victims by mimicking popular brands. Anyone who clicks will be redirected to a website to input sensitive info, and the sites often claim to accept payments from trusted wallets like Google Pay. I wouldn't trust Google Pay, but anyway. From there, a vast criminal network operating through YouTube and Telegram channels work to gather the information, with each scammer playing a specific role in a wide-reaching scheme that Google noted has tricked more than 1 million people in 121 countries so far, draining wallets and sometimes even bank accounts. The Lighthouse schemes have resulted in losses of over $1 billion, a Google press release said, citing a Department of Homeland Security estimate. Google is seeking an injunction to end the scams, noting that Google customers are among millions of innocent victims, as is Google, which dedicates substantial resources to detecting phishing. Yeah, because Google doesn't like competition. They'd like to be the ones who are harvesting your information and selling it, not these phishing companies. So the tech company is also upset that Lighthouse website templates abuse the Google trademark to dupe users into thinking that it's safe to enter credentials, noting that at least 116 templates feature a Google logo, YouTube, Gmail, Google, or Google Play on the sign-in screen. The Lighthouse Enterprise preys on the public trust in Google, except for those of us who don't trust Google. The tech company alleged Google hopes to recover damages if a court agrees that the criminal activity harmed the company's reputation and earnings. No, they're doing just fine on their own. They don't need a hacker and a scam like this to do it for them.
Yeah, I just kind of like, what good is that going to do? Because the scammers are still going to find ways to do all of this. I find that this just seems like a PR thing. It's not actually going to do anything. I mean, let's just be honest, right? Because it's a jurisdiction issue. Okay, you're suing people in China. Which court are you suing them in?
Yeah, because this is some international shit. Like, Google's here, China's
yeah,
way over there.
I don't know how that's going to work, but... I don't
it
know.
It may not. This could all just be
it sounds smoke and mirrors. Yeah, it sounds like smoke and mirrors. Now, but what is not smoke and mirrors is the fact that we get to talk about Bob Ross now. Because three Bob Ross paintings sold for $600,000 at auction in a fundraiser for public television.
The land of happy little trees.
Yes, we have happy little trees from Bob Ross. And we've all watched the classic the public television show from The Joy of Painting. It raised, but by selling three works from Bob Ross's show, they made over $600,000. And having relied on for decades on endowment contributions and pledge drives of every tact and description, it was a brilliant idea that puts a brilliant man and his brilliant perspective on the arts back into the spotlight 30 years after his death. I think this actually would have been Bob's idea, said Joan Kowalski, president of Bob Ross, Inc., the firm that manages his likeness content and collection of thousands of works that he painted on television in advance of the auction. And when I think about it, that makes me very proud. You know, they have a Bob Ross channel on
they do.
Yeah, they on Pluto TV or whatever, which is yeah, where when we watch fine quality television, that with a Mark Goodson seal of approval. They one of the channels they advertise for is the Bob Ross channel, which... So if you need that calming influence, yeah, you can go to Pluto TV or probably one of those other free ad supported television platforms and actually you can probably actually see it. The auction came months after cuts to PBS and other stations were passed in the most recent budget, but also as a pair of Bob Ross paintings touched and then surmounted six-figure valuations, something very rarely seen before. Now, Straight Arrow News, which spoke with Kowalski, also reached out to Bonhams, which had seen a pair of Ross's paintings sold for $115,000 and $95,000. Now, in many ways, the gentle television painter was a singular figure, irreplicable not only as a figure in time, but also in a style and method. method. Ross's paintings have always been conspicuously absent from the fine art auction circuits and rarely come anywhere close to these sort of valuations. But in light of the appreciation, Bob Ross Inc. will be auctioning Home in the Valley from 1993, Cliffside from 1990, and Winter's Peace from 1993. They were priced to start between $25,000 and $30,000, but quickly went to the moon. The first brought $229,100, the second $114,800, and the Winter's Peace went for a staggering $318,000. And I think there's a certain amount of snobbery in the art business, but Bob is a cultural touchstone. Aaron Bastian, the senior director of California and Western paintings at Bottoms, he told Straight Arrow News, he crosses a lot of different generations. Kids these days have seen him on YouTube. I watch him with my parents, right? And so it's something that readily is accessible to everyone. Now, modern artistic stars and works commonly seek to portray the world's challenges, contradictions, and crises, while Bob Ross, a former Air Force drill sergeant who vowed never to raise his voice again after leaving the military, sought every broadcast to create a world he wanted to see, full of happy little trees and all the rest.
That is amazing, by the way.
Yes. Kowalski points out that Ross loved the idea of public television and that he would probably have been the first to pull out some of his works to put towards the cause. After all, they aren't unique. Now, while viewers saw only the canvas that Bob Ross painted on screen over the course of the 30-minute program, that was actually the second of three renditions. One he would do before shooting as a preparatory work that sat off camera as a reference, the second he'd do for the recorded broadcast, and a third, well-finished work with much more attention to detail than he could manage on screen, was painted for his instructional booklets. Now, often, Ross would ensure the three remained together either in his holdings at Bob Ross Inc. or in the cases where he would donate them either to the PBS or to the Smithsonian. All of the money raised from the auction will go to Create Channel, which Straight Arrow describes as a premium lifestyle channel for public television stations. Now, another three works will be auctioned in January, part of a collection of 27 that could ultimately be sold to support the various channels and outlets under American public television.
I can kind of respect that. I mean, I grew up watching Bob Ross doing his painting stuff.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, there's some goods coming out of it. We kind of shit on the whole PBS thing, right? And I don't think there's any.
And we'll continue to.
Yeah, but here's the thing: like, if anybody that wants to donate their stuff to it, who are we to say anything? It's kind of and some of the stuff that they do is actually okay, right? And some of it's not so great, but that's it's like anything else, but like I said, Bob Ross was one of those things I think everybody kind of liked about it. And so, keep that going. Hey, why not? You know. All right, honey. I think it's the last call. Is it not? I mean, do we have anything more to say about Bob Ross? I mean,
No, just one final thought.
And by contributions from viewers like you. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm surprised we didn't use that as the opening clip for this.
Not when I found the happy little trees.
That's right, exactly. All right, it's
but you know what? I think it is finally last call.
No, I'm not done yet.
Oh, God.
All right, we don't have any more voicemails, but we have stories around our local area that
and
are
then
just...
these are a couple of winners. I'm going to tell you what. We have had a Soddy Daisy, yes, SODDYDAISY. It is a real place, Soddy Daisy, down by Chattanooga. Well, there's a man from there that was arrested for setting a woman on fire.
Fire, 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 fire.
In Soddy Daisy, Tennessee, a woman was intentionally set on fire Tuesday afternoon in the 1800 block of Cliff Eldridge Road, suffering third-degree burns over 70% of her body. According to the Hamilton County Sheriff's Office, Christopher Medulla, something wrong with his medulla oblongata, I'm just telling you, admitted to pouring gasoline on the victim and lighting her with a cigarette lighter inside or near a camper that subsequently caught fire. A witness intervened, detaining Medulla at gunpoint until deputies arrived and took him into custody. The victim was airlifted by Erlanger Life Force to a Nashville medical facility for treatment and unfortunately passed away. Medulla's being held in the Hamilton County Jail on charges of attempted first-degree murder. I would say not attempted. I think you managed it. Aggravated arson and aggravated assault. This dude is cuckoo for fucking Cocoa Puffs. Are you kidding me? Wow. No. No.
All
right. That is some serious domestic violence right there, folks.
Yeah. All right. This is really close to home. And I mean,
literally, like, around the corner.
Yeah. So there's a major drug bust at a Fairfield Glade home.
But we're winning the war on drugs. We're winning the war.
So according to a report by the Cumberland County Sheriff's Office on October 31st, 2025, so we're talking Halloween, right? At approximately 6:22 a.m., oh my goodness, Cumberland County Deputy Nicholas Brendel arrived at Rugby Road in Fairfield Glade, Tennessee, to serve a probation violation on a warrant on a suspect. That's a little early in the morning to be doing that, I would think. The resident, a 47-year-old Laura Jasmine Peterson, answered the door and denied the suspect was present, stating he had moved out months earlier. With Peterson's consent, Deputy Brendel conducted a protective sweep and immediately observed, immediately observed in plain view inside a rear bedroom. A glass methamphetamine pipe with residue. Go meth!
Woo, meth!
Yeah. A small baggie containing 0.8 grams of a white crystalline substance believed to be methamphetamine, probably was, a digital scale, a large vacuum-sealed bag containing approximately 9.9 ounces of the Mary Jane, far exceeding personal use quantities. Yes, Peterson was detained, read her Miranda rights, and initially evoked them, but then made spontaneous statements claiming she was only holding the marijuana for someone else. She was arrested on view for Schedule 6 drug violations and possession of methamphetamine. Now, a subsequent search warrant obtained and executed the same day were found even more marijuana, about 2/3 of a pound. Holy shit. And other drug paraphernalia. Holy crap. Like,
that's how you know you fucked up.
You know you have this shit. You know the cops are going to see it. And yet, someone knocks on your door and your first thought isn't hide all your shit. You stupid. You stupid. That's a lot of cheap. I don't give a fuck about the meth. That's a lot of green. It's going to make a lot of money for Fairfield Glade PD.
Well, you know, I call it a revenue enforcement operation. But anyway.
You are not wrong,
all right,
dude.
Let's get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, really, like, seriously.
Well, that's about it, really.
What?
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Fuck it. I gotta go.
Yeah, fuck it. We gotta go, because it's been so much fun, but...
I'm so fucking over this.
It is time for this to be over.
I got an idea to end all this bullshit.
Jordan fades back. Swoosh. And that's the game!
Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. You're cool. And fuck you, I'm out.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.